Welcome to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, the show where brilliant professionals share how to sharpen the universal skills required to flourish at work, enjoy more career fun, wins, meaning, and money with your host, Pete Mikitas.
Hello, and thanks so much for joining us here for episode 333 with Greg Williams. I think you'll really enjoy this chat with Greg because he is talking all about how to be more persuasive in your negotiation exchanges and how to always be negotiating. So you'll learn 1, 3 points to remember when negotiating with bullies, 2, 6 common body language cues in American culture, and 3, how to get productive outcomes through open communication. So if you'd like to take a look at the show notes or the transcript or the links to items we've referenced, you'll find that over at awesomeatyourjob.com/F333. And while you're at awesomeatyourjob.com, I hope you'll check out some of our cool resources. One cool resource I'll point you to is the Gold Nugget email list. So if you wish you could take notes on these episodes, but your hands are tied up, you're running or driving or something, cooking, you just can't put the pen to paper, we do it for you and send those notes to your email box for Greg, as well as unlocking access to all 332 exchanges we had with guests before Greg. So that's the Gold Nugget email list over at awesomeatyourjob.com. Now here's Greg's story. Greg Williams, the master negotiator and body language expert, has studied and practiced negotiation tactics and strategies for more than 30 years. He spent over 20 years studying the way body language can affect negotiation outcomes. Greg's education and experience come from formal negotiation settings, universities, governmental municipalities, seminars, and the School of Hard Knocks. He served on numerous corporate, business, and governmental boards. Here is Greg. Greg, thanks so much for joining us here on the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast.
Hey, you're more than welcome, Pete, and thank you for the invitation.
Well, you have many credits to your name. It's like the master negotiator and body language expert is right next to it, but even more so, I saw you were honored as the Businessman of the Year by the United States Congress. I didn't even know Congress issued such honors. So what is the story here?
Well, actually, that was several years ago. And when one does a lot in the community, one gets recognition for what it is that the value add happens to be. At one particular point in time, I had been appointed chairman of the New Jersey Development Authority by then Governor Whitman, and that authority addressed the needs of small minority and women-owned enterprises throughout the state of New Jersey. And that was part of the catalyst, the activities that I engaged in during that time that actually allowed Congress to bestow such an award upon me, of which I was very honored to receive.
Oh, well, it's just fun to hear you tell the story. Your voice has some music in it, and the word choice is distinctive. So I think this will be a very enjoyable conversation. And congratulations, and thank you for your service. That's really cool.
Thank you very much also, Pete.
All right, so you're a negotiation whiz. Can you share with us, maybe to kick us off, could you maybe give us a fun story of how a negotiation got transformed, or how someone was really worried things were not going to go so well, but then with some pro tips, things turned out amazingly.
Well, first of all, one should always understand the mindset that one possesses before entering into any negotiation situation. Because if you experience a sense of angst, you need to identify why you have such feelings. Is it because you perceive the other entity as having so many more resources than you do that there's no way you actually come out ahead or even with them? Is it the fact that there's something else that's causing you to have the feelings that may disallow you from being as vibrant in the negotiation as you otherwise would be? Once you identify those feelings, deal with them, and deal with them to the point that they are reality or just thoughts in your mind. And the reason it's so important to do so is because the feelings you carry into a negotiation will, to a great degree, determine how you will negotiate in that particular situation. Let me tell you a story real fast also, Pete, to actually highlight the point. I recently stayed at one of the 5-star hotels, and I thought, one day they didn't clean the room, and I had called down, and I came back to the room at 3-something in the afternoon. The room still had not been cleaned. I had a black tie event to attend that night. So I told them, please clean the room after 6 o'clock in the evening. And they said it would be taken care of. Well, I returned something after 10 that evening, and the room had not been cleaned. And you know how people tell you, oh, we value you as a customer? You know, my response to that is, okay, I'm from Missouri. Show me. I'm not from Missouri, but that's the cliche. So first of all, when you're negotiating, you always plan for what might occur and how you might respond. And I thought to myself, okay, well, these guys are saying I'm a valued customer to them. How would I like to position them, first of all, such that they have the opportunity to show me through their actions that I'm a valued customer? And what that also means is I had to come across in my own mindset what it is that I would want from them versus what they might actually offer. So I weighed those thoughts and I called the front desk. I asked to speak with the service front desk manager and told him of the situation that I just cited a moment ago. And sure enough, he said, well, you're a valued customer of ours. And I'm thinking to myself, are you serious? Okay. I said, well, what does that mean? Mm. And he said, I beg your pardon. I said, what's your definition of a valued customer?
I like that.
Now, yes, and here's the thing, Pete. When you ask such a question, people usually get caught off guard because they will usually say, you're a valued customer, and they'll usually take the floor. Listen also when people start to talk to you as far as the cadence, the pace at which they speak, because you'll also be able to glean insight per their nonverbal communications, the pauses, as to what their thought process might be. Anyway, he said, well, it means that we want to make sure that you are satisfied and happy with your stay at our property. I said, very, very good. I said, well, I'll tell you what would really make me happy in this situation. And he said, well, what would that be, sir? I said, if you could just deduct one night's stay as a result of this mishap, because after all, you'd expect something like this, and I'm not denigrating any hotel chain, but I said, you would expect something like this, could possibly expect something like this at a Hotel 6, but definitely not at, and I named the other hotel. And what I did there was positioned in his mind a Hotel 6, and again, not denigrating Hotel 6 chain, but in comparison to this particular hotel chain, they were substantially at a higher end, as it were. And I heard the pause. He didn't say anything for a moment, and I thought to myself, okay, he's in thought mode. And he said, sir, I can definitely do that. Well, that allowed me to get a few extra $100 that I otherwise would not have had. Now, that's one particular way that you can position someone, number one, as far as what wish them to compare themselves to based on what they've already said, thus to get them to show in action what it is that they mean by, in this case, a valued customer. But even more so, had he said too quickly, sir, no problem, we'll definitely give you that, and I was someone that wanted to take advantage of a situation, I then could have said, oh, and I'll have a bottle of Dom Perignon also, if you don't mind sending that up to the room. I state that simply to say, you have to always be aware of how quickly someone responds to a request or a concession that you make. And that's just a short story, just to highlight those points.
Oh, that's good. Now, in the course of that conversation, when did you explain the problem? They mentioned that you're a valued customer. And was that sort of before or after you kind of laid out the picture?
I had laid out the picture, and then he said, well, you're a valued customer. And you're right about that, because you also have to set the stage, as it were, for how you would wish the negotiation to progress. And by setting the stage, by telling him of the circumstances that had occurred earlier in the day than in the evening, I also positioned him to think, oh, God, this guy has really gone through a whole lot. Mind you, oh boy, again, never try to take advantage of any particular situation in a negotiation, because it could always blow up in your face and you can have all kinds of retributions to pay as a result of doing so. Mind you, at check-in time, and this particular hotel had one organization that had about 2,000 or 3,000 folks from a different organization that was already there. I was part of an organization that had another 1,500 people or so. And even at the check-in, I heard the day before, it was a 90 minute wait just trying to check in. Right. And I had already invoked that when I did check in, mind you, I was checking in the day after that, but I had already invoked that thought process and got upgraded to the executive suite as a result of doing so. So again, don't try to take advantage of situations, but when they are there for you to address, if you choose, do so.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so with the room not being clean, so I mean, in a way, that could be a big deal or not at all a big deal. So how did you, go about describing that it was substantial?
Well, all I said to him was, first of all, I talked about the fact that I had arrived earlier, or I should say got up earlier in the morning and left around 9 o'clock or so, and did not come back until something at the 3 p.m. And I paused, and then I said, and the room had not been cleaned at that time, which surprised me.
Okay.
Now, notice how I said that, which surprised me. And again, I paused just to let it sink in. Number one, I let it sink in, and I also wanted to hear how he might possibly respond. And he said, well, sir, we can send someone up right away. And I said, well, no, I have to get ready for a black tie event a little later on this afternoon, and I need to take a quick nap. How about if you have the room cleaned after 6 p.m.? And he said, okay, well, that'll be fine also. So again, after all of that did not occur, and I talked to, and it was the night was actually on, desk manager, front desk manager. I told him about the whole scenario of what had occurred and the fact that the room was supposed to have been cleaned after 6 o'clock between the time that I left after six and returned. And it's positioned just right, just right.
Yeah. And it's also interesting, the comparison to a Motel 6, which I have stayed in once or twice in my day as situations warranted it. I think is probably, you know, I don't know, has a strong reaction. And there's a, oh, no, but never us, you know, not that. And that's interesting because it's not like aggressively cruel to say that, but it's honest. You might expect that from a Motel 6 and you wouldn't expect that here. And so you're just sort of sharing that honestly, and tell me a little bit about your tone. So you sound friendly as we're speaking. Did you deliver the message in a similar tone there?
Yes, because I did not want to come across as being overly demanding or be someone that was perceived as a jerk. So I almost used the tone that I'm using right now. Number one, this type of tone will elicit empathy from the right person, because. So had he, as an example, Pete, had he said, sir, okay, we're sorry, the room didn't get cleaned. I apologize. That's the most I can do. I would have adopted a completely different tenor and tone with him. First of all, I would have let a pause hang out there to see what else he would have said to get him to negotiate against himself. Well, sir, are you still there? Well, I don't know. You know, I don't know if I'm here or not. I heard what you said, but even the tone at which you said it, to me, depicted the fact that I guess customer service really doesn't mean a whole lot at this fine chain that I've been very accustomed to having top-notch service at other property. Is it just your property that I'm going to have a challenging situation this time? You know, it would have been completely different. And with my latest book, Negotiating with a Bully, I talk about just that, using the right tonality in a situation such that you don't become overly confrontational initially, unless you have to be, want to be perceived as such. So you always want to match the tenor of the individual with whom it is that you're negotiating, such that you don't initially push them away, or push them too hard, or whatever be the case, because if you push someone into a corner that's mild and meek, they may come out of that corner doing unexpected things that you are not prepared to deal with, and thus you have to be very mindful of that also.
So you say matching the tone, that's your perspective, that if they come at you aggressive, that's appropriate to respond with an aggressive tone?
Well, it can be. What you need to do first is to find out exactly what they plan to do with that tone. Some people may use it just to back you down. Well, Greg, I'll tell you, I don't think there's anything that we can do. Oh, really? Yes, there's nothing that we can do in this case. Well, Greg, are you still there? Yes, I am, but I'm trying to decide to whom it is that I should speak since you can't satisfy this particular situation that might be able to lend me some form of satisfaction. Can you tell me the general manager of the property, or better yet, the regional vice president of the property? Oh, no, I'm sorry. Let's just skip the small steps. I'll go right to the president of the chain. Can you tell me who that might be? Because I need to talk with someone that can get this done. Now, what have I implied with that? Wait a minute. Maybe this guy's not going to be the pushover that I thought he may have been. And this guy appears to be willing to take this to higher levels that may cause more trouble for me than is warranted, because I really do have the ability to go ahead and address the situation. And I'll tell you, I've used the situation in a lot of situations, even with the products that were on sale, that whereby the sale had ended. You know, walk into an environment and you say to a sales clerk, I'd like to have this item. Oh, no problem, sir. Well, no, I mean for the price that it was advertised. Oh, well, sir, that sale ended yesterday. Oh, well, that's fine. You're empowered to give me this at the same price, right? No, I'm not, sir. Oh, so I know that means your manager can give it to me at that price, right? And I shake my head yes, as I'm saying right. And the salesperson will usually say, well, he says yes. Okay, he's backed himself into a corner because, and again, I never try to get anybody into trouble, but now he's put his sales manager on the line for being able to deliver this. So again, it goes back to how you wish to position someone such that you let them know you're going to be somewhat persistent while not being overly bearing in doing so.
Yeah, I like that. And it reminds me, you know, I was once, you know, consulting with a call center situation. And I remember it was interesting that inside the customer service rep's scripts, it was like, if a customer says any of these magic words, then they will get immediately elevated to someone else to help out. And so and I think some of the magic words were lawyer, FCC, FTC, and media. And so sometimes I've done this only a couple of times. It's just like, well, if you can't do anything, and then I don't know who to have to reach out to get resolution. Would it be the FTC, the FCC, a lawyer, the media? Just throw them all into one sentence and just see what happens.
Exactly. And you know, Pete, to that end, you have to be aware whom you're making such a statement, because if you're dealing with someone that really either can't or doesn't care about what you do, you're wasting your time. So when you're negotiating, you always need to be negotiating with an entity that can really give you what you need or want, or at least provide a stepping stone to the resource that can do so.
Well, great. Thank you. Well, so your specific book here is called Negotiating with a Bully. Yeah, I'd like to get your sense, first of all, you know, how do you define bully and how do you know if you're dealing with a bully?
It goes to how you feel. Each and every individual has to be able to sense to what degree he or she feels, though, he or she being bullied. Because here's the thing, Pete. You and I may be engaged in a negotiation, and I may all of a sudden drop the tone of my voice. And because of some trigger that reacts, or I should say that creates in your thought process, it may remind you of a time when you were in school and someone with a deep voice did such and such to you. And thus you may think subliminally, I'm getting ready to be bullied or something of that nature. Meanwhile, someone may put their tone with me, and I may think, okay, so the guy has a frog in his throat or something like that, you know? And I say that to say, when you feel as though you're being bullied, you can do one of a few things. You can actually say to the other individual, you know, I feel like something has changed all of a sudden. I sense you're being more aggressive at this time. And a person may say, oh, and just, I know you can't see me, Pete, but I literally, as I did that, I genuinely touched my chest and near my heart, which is a sign of sincerity, saying, oh, no, that was not my intent. I apologize. And even if you notice the tonality of my voice altered ever so slightly, too. Well, that individual, more than likely, was not really trying to be, not attempting to be a bully in that particular case. Person have been passive aggressive at that particular time. But nevertheless, once you told that person what you were sensing, if that person's intent was not to convey such actions or sentiments, that person will change his or her behavior. Okay, let's take a situation where someone says to you, yeah, okay, so what? Well, that's now you know exactly what you're dealing with.
You're darn right, Greg. If you're going to come after my company's reputation, you're going to have me gunning for you.
Yeah, exactly. Now you have a better idea of exactly what you're dealing with and the intent of that person. Another scenario that you could adopt at that particular point in time is, it's the exact same said to me. Quick role play.
You're darn right, Greg. If you come after my company or my reputation, you're gonna get me fighting right back.
Pete, can you tell me more about what it is that you mean by that, fighting right back? What does that mean?
I'm gonna make your stay as obnoxious as possible.
Oh, wow, Pete. Well, I really don't want you to do that. What might I do to avoid that?
Well, you can conclude this conversation and we'll go our separate ways.
And that'll satisfy you?
Yes.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, Pete, what if I tie you down instead? And now that I know exactly what you want, I'm going to make you give me everything I want before I let you go. How does that sound to you? Now, let's break out of the role play for a moment. That was a little quick scenario. What I just found out through the words that you made a moment ago was the fact that you want to exit. And suppose you were in my environment, and I've been in environments where some folks have done some real sneaky things to the other negotiator. Turn the heat up when the person was not being agreeable to the negotiator in whose building or environment the negotiation was being held. Turn the air up so it could get cooler, more comfortable when things were going good, et cetera, et cetera. Literally put time blockages in front of someone. If I know you have a deadline to get a negotiation finished with me, because before another session segment to be created with your team members, you have to wrap this up, and all of a sudden you come at me the wrong way, as it were, I will start speaking a little slower. I'll become a little more read, and I may do the exact same thing. If I know you're individuals that love to talk fast and try to show a lot through movements of your hands and your body language displays that you're really, let's get it done, move, I may intentionally slow you down to irritate the heck out of you. So there are all kinds of mind games that can be played, some verbally, some non-verbally, but the point is you need to know what that other person's restrictions are. He wants out of the negotiation the time frame in which he's willing to engage you to do so. And here's something else also, Pete, that I'd like all of your listeners to always remember. My tagline is always negotiating. That means what you do today influences tomorrow's outcome. So even if you're negotiating with a bully, to the degree that you let push you around and you don't do anything to push back on him, you set yourself up to be pushed around tomorrow, the day after that, or the one, in any environment, in with him. And thus, you have to set the stage properly to deal with people, not only for today, because in so doing today, you're dealing with them tomorrow. That's point number one. Point number two. I don't care who you're negotiating with. See yourself as being so insufficient, so lacking of resources, that you immediately feel as though you have to subjugate yourself in order to get what it is that person is negotiating with you for. Because if the person is negotiating with you, there's a purpose that they have in mind. If you uncover the purpose, if you understand who's not at the negotiation table, that's motivating that person to enact the actions that that person engages in, you'll have a better insight also as to how to manipulate that person. And by the way, manipulation is not a bad word. So just keep that thought in mind too.
Well, sure. Well, can you, let's hear about that a little bit. So manipulation is not a bad word. What? How should we think about it?
Well, we think about it based on what actions performed. In theory, you're in New York City. Traffic is whizzing by. You're looking at your phone and you're just, I don't know, sending text messages or whatever, not really paying attention. And you go to step off the curb right in the flow of traffic, and I manipulate your body out of the path of oncoming traffic. Have I done a good thing by possibly saving your life? I think you'd say yes.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So the point is, the definition that you give to a word or words specific meaning at the time that the word is being implemented. I use the word manipulation sometimes knowing that some people have a negative connotation of that word, and I may say something along the lines of, are you trying to manipulate me? Now, did you even notice how my voice went up a little bit?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, just displaying, when we get a bit excited, our voices will tend to rise. Are you trying to manipulate me? And again, you can't see my body language, but my eyebrows became somewhat furled also to, again, indicate I'm focusing on this particular situation. So again, nonverbal cues and body language play an added role to give additional leverage to the words that you use. But by doing that, you give more insight about what it is that you're thinking of. And if I use the word manipulation in that particular situation, and that person's that person has a negative connotation associated with that word, that person then knows that, oh, wait a minute, now he thinks I'm trying to negatively influence or impact him, his thoughts, his decisions, his actions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's one mild way of really pushing someone back away from you. So again, you need to know what certain words mean to someone. And I said a moment ago, my tagline is you're always negotiating. There are times I will be in environments where I will just observe who is sitting with whom, just to observe the relationships that are formed by those individuals, knowing later on that I have to engage with either of those parties. And if I know that X is associated with Y, I then know that, I may be able to get Y, use Y as a leverage to influence X also. I'll go into environments sometimes and I'll just watch how people use their body language. Pete, I've consulted with large corporations where I appear to be the person sitting off to the side taking notes. Meanwhile, what I was really doing was observing the body language of who it was that was supposed to be leading the opposing group's negotiation efforts and what cues that person was taking from someone else at the table that was the real source of power for that particular team or that particular side of those that were negotiating. And again, you can pick up on so many different cues if you but pay attention to what's going on in your environment. If you're going to be in a negotiation environment, get there early also, just so you can pick up on some of those cues.
Mm-hmm. Well, talking about cues, I also want to get your take on, you know, body language can be a little bit tricky and ambiguous subject. You know, what do you see are some of the most reliable body language signals, like, ooh, if I see this, it quite probably means that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's set culture aside for a moment. And the reason I want to set culture aside for a moment is because I want to speak generically first. In, let's say, the American society, taller people will usually be perceived as being more influential, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, than people that are not as tall as they are. Attractive people will also be perceived as having this extra oomph, as it were, than people that are not as attractive. So if you're negotiating with someone that's taller than you and you're literally standing face to face, one of the things that you could do is literally stand closer to them. and see what they do with that. Basically, what you're saying with that little small gesture is, I'm willing to come into your space because I'm not afraid of you. And you take note as to whether or not they take a step back or something of that nature. Now, if they take a step back, depending upon where you are in the negotiation, and that body language, by the way, of taking a step back literally says, you're in my comfort zone. I'm not comfortable with you standing as close as I am. And therefore, I'm going to put a little bit of distance between the two of us. You, as the shorter of the two individuals, send the signal, as I said a moment ago, of, hey, I'm not afraid of you. You may have more resources than I do, but so what? I will still come into your environment. Shaking hands. And I don't want to get into presidential politics. Just take note, of first of all, when you're shaking hands, if both hands are perpendicular to one another, the two individuals are saying, hey, I'm equal to you, you're equal to me, I recognize that fact in you, you recognize that fact in me. If one hand is on the bottom and another hand is on top, literally the hand on top is indicating I'm hands above you. And that indicates a power position in that particular situation. And thus, I always take note of when any political leader allows his hand to be on the bottom as opposed to on the top, because that also signals, and now it can be a ploy from time to time too. Again, in positioning, you could literally let someone have their hand on top of yours as you're shaking their hand, just see exactly what they will do. After that, a lot of people, especially politicians, know about the main handshakes, the hidden signals and handshakes, so forth and so on. So that's one particular body language gesture that you can look at. The other that you can look at, and you see politicians doing this a lot, is while they're shaking hands, they'll have their other hand on the person's elbow or something of that nature. Well, that's a power move that's even above the fact that somebody has their hand on top of yours. You're saying to them with that hand on their elbow, okay, I'm going to be in control in this particular situation. The counter to that is to literally place a hand on the person's shoulder. So there are all these hidden meanings in body language, and those were some just with the handshake of itself. Here's something else to note via body language, especially when you're either standing up, when you're standing up, take note of how individuals' feet are placed as far as their relationship to one another. When feet are aligned, the two individuals are aligned per what they're discussing, how engaged they are in that particular conversation, etc. When one foot points in one particular direction by one individual, right then, that person has mentally begun to disengage from the conversation. And more than likely, that person is going to exit the conversation in the direction that foot is pointed, in the direction that that foot is pointed. So those are some quick clues. Eye contact, again, it goes back to culture. But just because someone looks away from time to time does not necessarily mean they're trying to avoid whatever it is they're discussing. But you do need to note when they way. If someone says to you, I think you're the best person I've ever met in the world, I think you're really fantastic. Meanwhile, they're looking off to the side. Well, hey, symptoms may not convey exactly the meaning that the body language is sending, because they're not really sending that to you. Anytime you have doubts about whether or not someone's words and body language happen to be matched with the two are synchronized, always follow the body language. The body attempts never to lie, because the body always wants to be in a state of comfort. Telling a lie puts the body in a state of discomfort, and the body will try to adjust. Wringing of the hands sometimes is the fact that somebody is experiencing some form of angst, some form of anxiety, and that's the way the body tries to calm itself. Touching one's elbow, one's wrist, one's hands, one's nose, ear. Again, those are signals that, well, I'm a little uncomfortable at this particular point in time. Now, here's something else to take note of. When people are trying to recall things, they will, and some folks say it depends on whether or not they're right or left-handed, but again, you establish the base with how they act with this action that I'm about to describe in a non-threatening situation first. And then you'll know to what degree they're really speaking truthfully or not. But people that are trying to recall things will tend to look up and to the left. So if someone says to you,
Yes, they're left.
Thank you. They're left. So if someone were to say to you, so Pete, what did you do last night? And you say, you look to the left and you go, oh, well, I went out to dinner with my wife and yada, yada, yada. Okay, that's one thing. If, on the other hand, the same question was posed to you and you looked up and to the right, your right, that's the direction in which people look towards the future. Thus, they are in the process of trying to formulate what they think will really happen to a question that you've posed that was supposed to have occurred in the past. And if you take note of that, again, as a negotiator, you don't necessarily have to say anything. But you could take note of the fact that, wait a minute, that person looked up to the right. That's the creation mode in most cases. So why in the heck was he looking up to the right? You could pose a few more questions towards the same type of environment, about the same type of environment, I should say, to see exactly what the person does with his or her eyes. Then, later on in the negotiation, I might come back to you, Pete, and I say something about, so Pete, and now, this is called an assumptive question, what I'm getting ready to project. So Pete, you said 3 nights ago, you and your wife actually went to a movie. What was the movie you saw? And then watch the person. If the person then looks back up to the right again, oh my gosh, have I ever caught this person in one heck of a whopper? And again, you don't have to let the person know at that particular point in time, but you do know that person is definitely not being 100% truthful with you at that particular time. So those are some body language gestures that you can take note of. And in my prior book, Body Language Secrets to Win More Negotiations, I go into a lot more tactics and strategies that one can uncover just by observing language.
Now, and you used the word definitely there. Is that sort of after you've established a baseline associated with their behavior and the other body language signals?
Yes. That goes back to what I was saying earlier about the fact that I'll go into an environment and just observe how someone reacts in different situations where those situations are non-threatening. So again, and when you're using small talk to gain such insights, you might say something about, so where are you from? And I mean, okay, most of us know where we're from, so forth and so on. And they'll literally say something and they ask a question about, how long have you lived there? They may look up and to the left because what they're trying to do is, you know, gosh, how long have I lived there? They're going through that thought process as opposed to looking up and to the right. Now, if they look up and to the right, and they say, you know, I think it's been about 21 years. Okay, take note of that. Take note that they didn't look up and to the left, but instead they looked up and to their right to reference something that occurred in the past. Then you pursue, and you may say something along the lines of, did you play baseball at the high school in such a place? Now, let's say you look up and to the right again. Now, notice, that's supposed to be the opposite when they're doing their recall. But if you notice that they keep looking up and to the right for recall and to the left when they're trying to think of future things that will occur, you then have the baseline for which to then place your emphasis per whether or not they're being 100% truthful. But that's why it's so important to understand and establish that baseline, which is why I love to just go into environments and just observe how people are using their body such that they're conveying different sentiments in non-threatening environments. And then I have something to compare their actions to when we enter into what they think is the formal negotiation. But in theory, in reality, you're always negotiating. You're giving off clues as to how you will react in different situations anytime you're in an environment where people are observing you.
Mm-hmm. And I want to talk a little bit about some of those dominant signals or gestures. I want to get your take on what strategy is optimal, because if someone is doing a lot of dominant stuff with me, I just don't like that. I mean, it makes me feel less rapport, because like, okay, you have to be in charge. I think that could really be harmful, because in terms of establishing, you know, liking, rapport, trust, it's like, I don't like this person. But I guess there could be other times in which a dominant strategy is helpful. So how do you think about that?
Well, it definitely can be helpful. Again, dependent upon the individual that you're dealing with. Pete, some people want to be led because they feel more comfortable being led by others such that they don't have to make decisions. Other individuals are the type that you just mentioned a moment ago. My gosh, hey, don't be putting my hand on the bottom. Don't be touching my elbow. If you sense that type of person, again, you need to match the modality of the person that you're speaking to in order to get them to do what it is that you want per the outcome that you seek. And thus, if you are too overbearing, if I use those with the tactics that you just mentioned a moment ago, putting your hand on the bottom, touching your elbow, et cetera, even putting my hand on your shoulder, I'd be pushing you away with my gestures and running the risk of turning you into someone that might really come back and undermine my efforts later on, which is you have to be very understanding of how someone wants to be treated and how they want you to interact with them. Everyone wants to be treated with respect. The degree that you do so per how they perceive you doing so is what you have to be very much aware of. If you're too aggressive, you'll scare some people away. Other people, you'll make come closer to you because, truth be known, they get off on that, as they say. That's what they like. But in other cases, you may just repel someone. And again, you never want to do so to the degree that you push someone into a corner and have them become irrational, because then you truly don't know what it is that they may do, especially when you're negotiating with them. You make a person make one concession after another, after another, after another, after another. Next thing you know, they say, oh, the heck with it. You know what? I don't give a heck about this whole daggone deal. I'm out of here. And you go, oh, what just happened? Well, what just happened? The increments of small steps that you push that person into to make them all of a sudden say, you know what? The heck with this. My self-pride is at stake at this particular point in time, and that's more valuable to me. The outcome of this negotiation, you go negotiate by yourself.
Gotcha. Well, tell me, Greg, anything else you want to make sure to mention before we shift gears and hear about some of your favorite things?
Well, again, it was my mother many years ago that used to say to me, because I watched her literally, Pete, negotiate for everything. And as a little kid, I remember one time saying to her, Mom, that's embarrassing. You're always asking people to lower the price, to add a little bit more. My gosh, won't they think we're poor? And she said to me, what do you care about what other people think of you as long as it is that you're getting what you want? The more money you save, the more money you'll have to do with as you choose and please. And I, you know, as a kid, seriously, I quickly got over the embarrassment and I learned to ask for whatever it was that I wanted. And you have to have a certain thickness of skin not to necessarily allow the thoughts of other people to influence your actions to the degree that they do so, and those actions become detrimental to your own well-being.
Yes, and I think a larger part of it would be a matter of just how important is this sort of long-term relationship, you know, for you in terms of, like, are you going to see this fancy hotel person, you know, in a way, if he thinks Greg is just the most demanding, unreasonable customer I've ever encountered based on you wanting a free night for the room not being cleaned, and how much is that a downside to you versus like your boss or your spouse? it's a very different game there.
And Pete, you know what? Oh my gosh, you are spot on. Here's the other potential downside to that. In that particular situation, if I had been so adamant that the individual thought, oh my gosh, no problem. Yeah, I'll give you a one night's remittance. No problem. And then he put some remark in my file, in my record, that said, whatever. And then that stayed with me as I went from one particular chain, or I should say one particular property in that chain after another. And I go to check in and people looking at me like I have a third eye in the middle of my forehead or something. And I'm wondering why. I say that to say that's another reason why you don't want to be mean or nasty to somebody, because you don't know to what degree they'll get you back behind your back.
If you'd like to have the ability to negotiate in multiple languages, I recommend Babbel. Babbel's the world's number one selling language learning app, and it's got a killer 4.6 star rating from over 22,000 ratings. You can learn Spanish, French, Italian, German, Russian, and more. And you learn that through interactive dialogues, speech recognition, fun trainers, and quizzes. In my own experience, I have long wanted to learn how to speak Spanish and even bought some other software to try to learn that, but I had trouble finding the time to hunker down by the computer to use it with consistency. But with Babbel, I could do a quick 10 to 15 minute lesson on my phone anytime, anywhere. They've even got a cool offline mode for when you're on a plane or your internet connection is just not quite reliable for you. I love their clean, simple visuals and the really cool kind of video game-esque rewarding sound effects that give me sort of miniature celebration each time I get something right. And if you go to Babbel.com and use the offer code AWESOME, you'll get 50% off your first 3 months. That's Babbel, B-A-B-B-E-L.com, offer code AWESOME for half off of each of your first 3 months. Certainly. Okay, well, now could you share with us a favorite quote, something you found inspiring?
Oh, Lord knows, I already gave it. You're always negotiating.
Got it.
And the reason that's so inspiring is because it keeps me grounded. And okay, we all go through day by day. At times, we may have an up day, a down day, but life is truly what you make it. And thus, it's nothing more than perceptional. If you're the one making it what it is to you anyway, why not choose to make it the greatest that it can be? You'll live a lot better by doing so.
Oh, thank you. And how about a favorite study or experiment or a bit of research?
There's everything in life revolves around negotiations. So if you really wanted to read some additional books on the topic of negotiation, one that I really love is Getting to Yes by William Ury. That was, my gosh, that book is old. But nevertheless, there's still some great insights into that. His more recent book is Getting Past No. A lot of us don't know what to do when someone says no. Remember, no only means no for the moment. Life is ever changing, ever evolving. So be persistent in achieving the goals that you seek to acquire. Don't let no stop you for the moment. Another book of mine, and you may be able to tell that I love negotiations, but Difficult Conversations is another particular book, another old one. And here's one. That I've recently started listening to, and it's actually an online course, Understanding the Mysteries of Human Behavior. Boy, oh boy, you can gain a lot of insight as to why people do what they do based on the emotions that they experience and in the moment, and how it is that you can incite certain emotions, certain triggers within someone to get them to either abide by what it is that you're requesting and or back off of you, if that be your outcome.
And how about a favorite habit?
Always negotiate. Don't be afraid to ask for stuff. I will ask for some of the most mundane things just to see the results from time to time. And the reason I do so is because I'm always collecting data. Okay, I did this in this particular situation and it worked. I'll pick up pennies off of the ground. And there have been times when I've asked people, so you're trying to achieve wealth. How many of you in here will pick a penny up if you see it lying on the ground? And people will snicker from time to time. But the point is, we make progress in small steps. A penny is yet another small step towards an overall wealth outcome, if that's what you're really receiving. So don't be too pride. Don't have much pride in order to subjugate yourself to the goals that you seek, because all you're really doing is holding yourself back.
All right. And is there a particular nugget you share that really seems to connect and resonate and get quoted back to you?
Well, I love it when people that I haven't seen for years will come up to me and say things along the lines of, oh, Mr. Williams. And when they say Mr. Williams, I always say, no, my father is nowhere around right now. Just please call me Greg. And they'll say, you have helped me so much by teaching negotiation strategies that I've been able to use to get a lot more in life, humble to other individuals, serve other individuals. I attempt to give back to those, especially younger than myself, because I'm at a point in life now where one day they will be the rulers of the world that I will have to live in. And I hope by giving them insights, instilling in them the knowledge that they can use in order to not only look out for those that they care about, but for other individuals in the world, that the world will become a better place.
Mm-hmm. And Greg, if folks want to learn more or get in touch, where would you point them?
Well, they can go to my website, which is www.themasternegotiator.com. They can send me an email to Greg, and that's Greg at themasternegotiator.com. They can also reach me via phone at 609-369-2100.
All right. And do you have a final challenge or call to action for folks seeking to be awesome at their jobs?
Yes. Don't be afraid to negotiate. Go out there and negotiate every daggone day. Because if you want a raise tomorrow, start positioning yourself to get that raise. I'm sorry, if you want a raise in 6 months, next year, start positioning yourself today to do so. Understand what it would take from your boss such that you become such a valuable resource that he has to give you the rate that you ask for simply because you are that valuable. Don't be afraid to negotiate. No only means no for the moment, and the more persistent you are about achieving a goal, the more goals you will achieve.
All right. Well, Greg, thank you. This has been a lot of fun, and I wish you tons of luck in your negotiations and all you're up to.
Thank you, Pete. And much more success for you in life because it's waiting for you.
I really appreciated Greg's take on always be negotiating, as it was clear he was living it out in that hotel situation. And it's funny, I guess I have not adopted that mindset or philosophy, because when that sort of thing happens to me, it's like, oh, they didn't clean my room. Oh, that's a bummer. I just kind of shrug it off. Like, yeah, it's disappointing. It's a little less pleasant to be here, but, you know, I guess we'll be gone tomorrow. No big deal. You know, I just sort of like brush it off, you know, my disappointment. But I think Greg helped me see that. No. There's an opportunity here to practice the negotiation skills. And even if I don't care a ton about the outcome, hey, if you could save $100+ for getting a comped hotel room night, that's kind of worth taking a crack at it at bat. And it's kind of thrilling, you know, asking for something that's come up in some of our previous episodes with the going for no or not taking no for an answer with Alex Grodnick, and going for no was Andrea Waltz. So good themes reinforced there to bring a little bit of more enthusiasm, adventure, and maybe cash money savings into your life by always being negotiating. Again, if you want to check out the show notes or the transcript, the links to items we've referenced, it's on over at awesomeatyourjob.com/ep333. And if you haven't already, I hope you'll push the subscribe button. And if you do, you'll hear from our very next guest, who is Maxie McCoy. She's got some great perspective on how you figure out the whole, what the heck am I doing with my job, career, life question, and dealing with that. Oh, so well. Hope to catch you there, and peace.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode. To get the most out of this conversation, visit awesomeatyourjob.com to find today's show notes, transcript, and infographic summary cheat sheet. For more entertaining professional skill sharpening, be sure to subscribe to catch the next episode of How to Be Awesome at Your Job.